Hello and welcome to Pedagodzilla on Tour, coming at you sort of almost live from the Playful Learning Conference at the University of Sussex in Brighton. In this particular specific case, from the kitchen of a Halls of Residence. I am your host, Riggedy Diggity Mike Collins, and I am joined as ever by my very capable co-host.
I am Mark Childs, and apparently I'm the Rachel of this particular scenario.
And we are, Mark and I are joined by a very special guest, friend of the podcast.
Member of the podcast now.
Yeah, member of the podcast. Sorry, Simon, officially. Oh, no, I've dropped your name in.
It's a spoiler, but only of my first name. My name is Simon Overton. I'm very, very happy to be here with the illustrious Mark and Mike. Your illustry is the most illustrious I've ever illustrized. Now cut that bit, would you?
Nope, that's I liked going it. In. That was very well illustrated. We are at Playful Learning Conference. This is my third year coming. This is Mark's 25th,
I think.
Yeah, twiddly-umptiff. Simon, this is your first.
It is my first.
So we normally come and do kind of like a podcast recording booth and then live conference coverage, but we thought, how can we make an even bigger rod for our own backs? And this year we've made a session where we've essentially invited some of the podcast participants to form groups, select potential structures for their show, assign roles, and then record a takeover special segment. The very first one of those is Platypus Party, which you will hear now.
We are Platypus Party. Come on! And we're at the Playful Learning Conference in Brighton.
Indeed.
My name's Laura, and this is probably my third or fourth Playful Learning Conference. At this point, it's getting a bit of a blur. And I'm really enjoying my time here. Today, we've been looking at a number of stuff, a number of things in day one. And I have been supporting a beach hut group on the theme of seagulls.
Yes, indeed.
Yay!
Hi, everyone. My name is Jodie Heap, and this is my technically second time attending the conference, but I was so, so ill the first time that I attended that it was a blur, but for the wrong reasons. So hopefully, I've heard such good things that I just had to come back and experience it without being really ill. So far, day one has been spectacular and it is living up to the hype. So I am just a normal attendee this year, not presenting, not leading anything. So just getting to be a normal attendee.
I'm Becky Hartnup. I'm here for the second time. I came last year and loved it. So this year I'm presenting, which has presented some challenges. But all around, it has been a really fun experience. There's been some great sessions. Loved the keynote this morning and have got so many notes of things that I want to take back and do in community work. Loved the session I did on poetry. And then there was my session, but we'll talk about that later.
So we're going to give you some of our exciting experiences. Here it comes.
Yeah, so here we have a couple of soundbites, snippets, thoughts of the sessions that I've attended today in a variety of formats, technical issues standing. So hopefully have a few clips here of how I found day one so far.
Hey guys, Jodie here, checking in just before we start session two, storytelling session. I am extremely excited, just recording a little voice clip. Here we go.
Hey guys, I'm Jodie, and I'm Jodie here, reporting from the end of session two. Can confirm it was a wild success with many laughs, applause, and hilarious scenarios. Jodie here, checking in from the afternoon of day one of the Playful Learning Conference at the University of Sussex, the lovely Brighton campus. I am having so much fun. The keynote was excellent. The sessions that I've attended so far have been really good. It's just a lot of fun to be able to talk to other people about how we can incorporate education, incorporate play, how the different backgrounds everybody comes from. It's just really refreshing to immediately start off on that level of agreement where we all think that play is an important element that we should incorporate into our practice. So a little bit of nerding out from me for that, but it's really nice. Everyone is being so lovely, pleasant, easy to talk to. I've made friends, sat down and did a puzzle for a bit with someone. Just nice vibes all around. So yeah, wrapping up the session that I've just been to, which was all about storytelling. Absolutely loved that. Really enjoyed the narrative arc of how we can incorporate storytelling to help people understand different perspectives, different problems, and how that can be used to get across ideas, thoughts, and concepts. Yeah, really lovely. So yeah, that's it from me for now. Off to have a cup of tea and maybe a slice of cake, and on to the final session of the day. But if we let that, checking in again, just to say that my next session is going to be Plagiarudo, something about academic integrity through a whodunit game. Sounds like a lot of fun. Hopefully it will be. We'll report back afterwards. Coming in from the final session, which was a Cluedo-based plagiarism game session, a lot of fun, a lot of discussion about playing board games and using game products to introduce perhaps more dry academic skills content. Very spicy discussion of whether to include dice rolls or not. So yeah, quite an interesting discussion at the end there about whether we should stick to the OG board games or whether we should go off on our own adventures with creating new mechanics of games. But yeah, really wonderful session, good crowd. On to the evening meal now. Can't wait. And over to you.
So, being in charge of a beach hut group, what's that been like? Here's my initial thoughts. Hi, so I'm Laura Mitchell. I have been acting as a beach hut leader at the Playful Learning Conference today, and I just wanted to kind of collect some thoughts about what that was like. It's been my first time. I was at the Playful Learning Conference last year and the year before, and
on this occasion, when I signed up, I got an email afterwards from the organisers asking if I would be okay to act as a leader of one of their small group social groups, which they have during the conference to help integrate new people into the community. Because although it is quite a small conference, it is nonetheless probably quite intimidating if you're coming along for the first time. So I agreed to that, and they said, okay, there's going to be a theme. We're going to be beach huts, and your specific beach hut group is going to be Team Seagull. So I thought, fantastic, there's going to be some games, and we're going to be involved in some way as a team in those games. Then they did a briefing meeting, so we went along to that, and they explained some of the games that we play at the conference. They're not too onerous, but I did feel a little bit responsible now for these people who are coming along. There would be a mixture of people in my group, people who've been here before, people who are perhaps coming to this as their very first conference. And playful learning is really different to other conferences. So I thought, okay, how do I try and set this up while being in keeping with the theme of seagulls? So I spent some time, very briefly, on the internet finding stuff out about seagulls. And I cut out some cardboard cutouts of seagulls and I painted them. And I thought, great, I'm going to do an activity. So this morning we've had our keynote, and then straight afterwards we gathered together in our beach hut groups. So in the briefing they said to us, oh, this would be a great time to talk about the keynote. But I thought, well, first of all, we need to learn who each other's are. So we spent some time, we played Pass the Parcel, and to make it seagull themed, I wrapped some things in a parcel, crisps and sweets and things, in newspaper to make it look like a fish and chip packet, because we are all seagulls now, right? And it was really nice to sort of direct that, but you also sort of feel a bit weird, like you're sort of one of the organisers, but you're sort of not one of the organisers, so you have an obligation, but you also don't really have an obligation. So that was quite an interesting, slightly tense experience. But yeah, so that's been really helpful. I hope to... I've made seagull noises, and in making seagull noises, I have also learned loads of stuff about seagulls, and I've shared them with the group. And people in the group have also handed round a little sort of hat bag with seagull facts in. So we shared some seagull facts. I'm going to share one of them with you now. Seagull facts for you. Did you know that within colonies, there are often alpha seagulls who assert dominance through displays of aggression? Of course you know that. You've probably had seagulls telling you that they are the guy in charge when they're trying to face you off and get your ice cream when you're at the beach. And that just made me think, because in the keynote, there was this discussion about how we create our social and physical environment, and a lot of that is designed to make us be consumers. If you've got money in your pocket, it's okay for you to be in a space. And I was just thinking about this in the beach hut group. I was like, oh God, am I responsible for these people now? Is it like being their boss? Do I have to control my seagull colony? What's happening? What's going on? But we went into lunch and we did a few other things. And generally speaking, I hope everybody has had an opportunity to get to know each other a little bit. And now they're moving on to be independent seagulls. And they can go out there and they can scavenge from the ideas that they encounter in the different sessions. And after that, I felt the need to spend some time in the quiet room. I wrote you a poem. Spending quiet time. Even seagulls need to nap. Don't check emails. There's no need to produce. Consolidating needs rest. Still water lets things rise to the surface. Emma and Pippa have got me thinking about hostile architecture. Would the opposite be a space to flourish, to become excellent at sharing, recycling knowledge, not scavenging it?
My session was on storytelling and how stories can transport you into another world and into the experience of another person. So step inside my experience of presenting a playful learning.
Slight crisis here. All the laptops that we'd set up with technology on them have also been wiped. So we're logging in again, right from scratch, and starting again. We've got a very full room in here. What have we got? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 on that table. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 on that, 7 on that table. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. We were thinking we were going to have 30 people in this room. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 1, 2, 3, 4. We have got a lot of people in here. Hey everybody! No, I don't. Lovely. Hey everybody, apologies for the slight delay. We'd set everything up in advance, but in true playful learning form, tech, it doesn't always happen the way you wanted. Rather excitingly, I am also taking part in the live podcasting today, so I'm about to record you all and all say a nice big hi, but I'll do a quick intro and then we're going to get on with this, okay? So we've got 40 people, we were expecting 30, don't have enough Chromebooks.
Leaving this switched off.
People are smiling though and talking. Yeah, it's not a disaster. Karina tells me it's a win. We'll see.
Right,
we're meant to be here tonight.
How far in now? And we should be at Halloween.
Okay, I'm afraid you are going to tell a story. This is not going to be the pink story ever, but this is a great quick way to build a fedora. Okay, you're going to give us a character with a wish. You can give us some vulnerability if you want, but you're going to just tell us, and it can be as simple as once upon a time there was a frog who wanted to be a dolphin. It can be that ridiculous. Audience, you're allowed to laugh. You're laughing with them, not out of them. Once upon a time...
Once upon a time, there was a hungry, hungry seagull called Marmaduke.
And what did Marmaduke want?
Chips.
Marmaduke wanted chips more than anything in the world, but Marmaduke couldn't get chips because...
No hands or thumbs or reason.
He had no means for paying for them. Until one day, something happens in Marmaduke's life. It can be anything you like. Alicia spotted a shiny credit card on the beach. One day, Mum spotted a shiny credit card on the beach. Oh, I've missed every day. And we're going to jump back up. Can you replace that? Can you give us an everyday thing that Marvin did, rather?
She look around to find some leftover chips.
Such every day,
taking people that she wanted to play.
Every day, Marvin would go looking for chips. Now, one day, something happens. It's got to be different.
It's not perfect.
What is it?
One day, stumbled upon a bucket of chips that someone was watching, but they just turned around.
Because of that... There might be stickers. Audience reactions as well. Because of that, what happens because of that moment? Cause and effect here.
They dive towards the bucket to eat some chips, but get stuck headfirst in the bucket.
Oh,
So we've got another unfortunately. What gets worse for Marvin? They're stuck in a head first in a bucket of chips. Unfortunately.
The person who's chipped it was turned round.
Oh, Ian.
Because of the person turning round. I was going to do that. Because of that. What would happen next? Because of that, Marmaduke gets very, very... No, because Marmaduke gets very, very frightened and loses control of his bowels.
Okay, now...
Until finally...
This always happens. Until finally, the council needed a whole new budget to clean up after the
Marmaduke.
The explosive diarrhea that was caused and the staining on the paper.
So the council has invested in cleaning it up. Now, somebody around the room, anybody around the room, give us a happy ending for Marvin. Or Marmaduke.
Or both.
The person whose bucket it was, and spat it up really bad, but Marvin lost control of his bowels, decided to adopt Marvin and Pip to Kevin.
Oh, One last thing, everybody. What is nice is when a story that is specific gets leveled up. And that's often called a moral. So the moral of this story is...
The moral of the story...
Don't take
your hands off your chest. Thank you. That is the story structure you have just played out. You have just made the Pixar movie with us. Now, what have we got?
Well, that was a fascinating experience. I think I've learned a lot about managing large groups. Hopefully, people enjoyed it. We got quite a few requests to have the material sent to them afterwards. People seem to enjoy the non-techie stuff as well as the techie stuff. And they loved the videos that we showed them, I think. I'm going to ask my fellow presenter, Karina, from Solent University, what she thought about the session.
I think it was a session, considering the time it was on, there was a lot of energy in the room. I think people were hooked. It just goes to show people love stories. They absolutely love them. And I think having the chance to watch some and then have the chance to create them themselves, everybody was into that. What I was surprised about was how dark some of those stories got. There was a lot of death. But also some happy endings as well, a lot of humour. And I think this act of creation was very enjoyable. The large group thing was interesting. I haven't done that for quite a long time. I'll probably sleep very well tonight as a result of this.
Our session at Playful Learning was about... using storytelling techniques for engaging storytelling and using creative technologies. So we were bringing together storytelling, we were bringing together ideas around character, ideas around the story structure, how we bring the audience into the world of our characters and let them experience the activities and stresses and excitement that the character's going through. And how you show that using video, using images, using music. We ended up with a very, very large group, so around 40 people, and we were expecting a maximum of 30. We also had some major tech problems at the beginning. But I think all in all, we had a good session. People seemed to learn from it. People have asked for follow-up information. They enjoyed the videos that we showed. They enjoyed the improv activities that we brought in, and they engaged with filmmaking, and they all came out with something around a film, whether it was characters and scenes or a whole story, arc that was heartwarming or terrifying. So, yeah, it was a good experience. So what were your insights from today? Laura, what was your big insight?
Okay, big insight. Been at the conference many times, and now we are in Brighton. It is a different physical space. You'd think it wouldn't really matter what university you're at when you go to a conference. I actually found the physical space today a really different experience to being at other conferences. We have all been in rooms along one corridor. Then we've eaten in the same space and we've socialized in the same space. And there was a quiet area which I did have to take myself away to after a while because it was just a little bit intense to experience not just your own energy, but the energy of a lot of other people. And playful learning is fantastic, but actually even learning about playful learning is still really quite tough. It takes a lot of effort. And so I was like, hang on, I'm tired. I need some time to like process. So that was something that I'd forgotten. Is that not only do we have to spend a lot of time in prep, and it's great to meet people and you're very excited to learn how to be more playful and great new innovative ideas and thinking about things in a different way, but actually the space is important, and also like the sort of general takeaway is you'd have to look after yourself as a delegate, as an instructor, as much as you need to think about your students.
I think it's one of those things that's really easy to forget when you're prepping to use playful learning techniques in the classroom. When you're thinking about making it exciting for your students, making it different, keeping it relevant, you can forget that actually that whole process is challenging for them, especially if they're not used to it. And that actually you need to encourage them to learn how to build in space for themselves to go away and process.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think particularly there's a lot of different types of academic conferences, and it's been really great that we've had this beach hut space today. This has been our first beach hut space where we've come together as a little group and got to know each other. And I'm looking forward to using that tomorrow and in the other days of the conferences to sort of like help other people as well as myself sort of do some of that processing.
So, Laura, you were a beach hut leader. Jodie, what was your beach hut group and what was your experience?
So it's my first time being in a beach hut. I had heard of them. Well, I heard of the groups last year. So I was an ice cream this year. And I really enjoy it.
Being an ice cream.
What I like about the Playful Learning Conference and the beach hut, the group concept, is the capacity for it to gently introduce you to other attendees. I've gone to many a conference and they can be very individualistic. You go individually, you sit, you listen to the session and you go away. Whereas I really like the concept of here are some people, let's gently get to know each other. There's a face you might recognise at lunch or in a session that you're attending next. Let's see how things go tomorrow. It's a really useful tool for me to have a nice little bit of interaction with others without that forced ick feeling. So, yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? Because playful learning is about bonding with people, isn't it? And it's quite a short period to get to know people, and there's a lot of people here, and I think the beach huts give you an opportunity to get that feeling of belonging, like, you know, like your little clan that you can go back to.
So, Becky, you were presenting today. What did that mean for you in terms of your sort of preparation and also your ability to experience the other parts of the conference, like your beach hut or like other sessions that you went to?
I was presenting, but I was presenting on something that I presented on before. So I actually had a starting point. It was based on some work that Karina and I had done at Solent University. And we brought in some lessons from that. Interesting to compare and contrast different processes, different ways of approaching it. Being me, I always have 10 times as many ideas. So I actually have 3 or 4 presentations that I didn't give today that I did make for today. Some which were looking at figurative art and drawing of stick people in cave paintings and comparing that to Sweet Tooth. So that's a whole other discussion.
Maybe next year.
Maybe next year. Obviously, on the train, I was making final changes because, again, the ideas just keep coming. And in the room, I'm an improviser, so something's changed in the room, partly because we had 40 people rather than 30, so the ratio of people to laptops was higher than we expected. But yeah, I felt that I could engage with the other sessions. It really was just an intense moment of, let's say, near panic, when the tech wasn't in place 5 minutes before we were due to start and then 5 minutes after we were due to start. That was stressful.
So being a presenter is stressful and requires a lot of preparation and a lot of stuff that you maybe aren't even going to use. Can I also ask, when you're thinking about coming to a conference like Playful Learning, do you have a sort of specific goal in mind about what you want to get out of it? Like, were you expecting to come here and say, here's the Playful Learning stuff we did, tell me why it sucked?
No. I think our goal was to actually communicate more widely some of the stuff that we'd learned, to get people a little bit further down their storytelling with technology journey, to teach some storytelling concepts. That was really important to us. But we were also specifically asked to make sure that people engaged with the technology. So there wasn't an option to go, drop the tech, it's too busy, drop the tech, let's just do the story stuff. So we were kind of playing by the Playful Learning rules. My goals, if I had any, were for us to have a good time, for people in the room to have a good time, and for them to learn something about stories or about tech.
And as someone who attended that session, I can say you achieved all of that.
Yay! Well done!
Well done.
Woo. Round of applause, please, editor.
No, that's laughter.
Laughter would do fine too. Yeah.
I'm sure you can find it in post.
So I have a question, which is, for people who have never presented before, what would you both recommend, give advice to? Would you say that the Playful Learning Conference is a good place to start, to submit maybe?
I think it's a fun environment. I think it's an environment that encourages people to try new things. A lot of being creative is about being allowed to fail. If you're not allowed to fail, we all become a little bit smaller, a little bit less brave. And I think this is great because it allows you to be brave. But my dear friend Giskin said to me that when she presents at the Playful Learning, she knows that all those things that she does that other straight academics think are really cool and clever, she'll bring here and we'll be like, yeah, we all do that. So you've got to go the extra mile. You've got to be braver. You've got to be more ambitious. You've got to be more playful. And that's something to bear in mind and sort of the challenge you've got to face.
Yeah, I think that Playful Learning is a fantastic place to bring something you're using and ask people either what they think about it or how you can make it better. Mm-hmm. if you are using something and it's not working, or you've gone through a playful learning journey with some students and you're discovering that maybe your students are not as playful as you were hoping, and exploring why that might be and whether you're going down the right track and what you could do to sort of like add things to your design toolbox, I think playful learning is the perfect place for that. But if you want to come to playful learning and be kind of like theoretical or do something sort of scholarly about playful stuff, I'm not sure it's as productive an environment. It's a great place for meeting people to follow up on that and do that with. But you're not going to get ordinary conference sessions at playful learning. Mm. It's going to be interactive, and it's going to be about putting more juice in your tank.
I mean, personally speaking, last year I presented a session with a colleague, and as a result of that has led me to investigate actually researching it, because the feedback that I had from attending here, people said, that is a good idea, you should investigate that. I went, oh, okay then, I will. So that is something I would say, is that actually was initially that the presentation wasn't necessarily about the scholarly side of things. It certainly encouraged me to be more academic with quantifying the impact of the product that I've made. So I think I agree, but also a little bit not. I do think it is academic because it has that end result.
Oh yeah, I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying the sessions are not primarily aimed at that. Like, yes. I don't think that's often the goal. But I think it's a great place to meet people and follow up on that and get advice. I think it's a
place to find your tribe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
I've met some very fun people. I had some really productive conversations, and I have to say I'm really, really looking forward to tomorrow, day two.
Fantastic. While we're on the subject of tribe, Jody, if you were an ice cream, what flavour would you be?
I mean, I immediately, my heart says mint choc chip. It's, you know,
why?
A little bit fresh, nice bit of chocolate, you know, something for everyone. How about you?
I think that if I had to choose, I'd probably go with lemon meringue.
Ooh.
Tart but sweet. What about you, Becky?
Well, I'm all about the mashup. I love mashing ideas together. So I'm going to go for salted caramel with raspberry sorbet.
Wow, that's blowing my mind.
Get to the seafront. Let's try that combination out.
I hear we're going to the pier tomorrow, so I'm really excited.
Who's going in the water?
Me.
Yay! Skinny dipping anyone? And on that point, that's a wrap. 3, 2, 1.
We hope you've enjoyed playful learning so far.
And enjoy the rest of the conference.
Bye.
Okay, that was Platypus Party Meow. Platypus Party Bacow. Mm. I really like what they did. I thought it was really good. I thought it was better than I could have. If anything, actually, it felt like they covered the conference better than I had plans to. Moving now to, as this is our daily coverage, our reflections on the conference thus far. It's day one, started with the keynote, and then we've had a couple of sessions since then. So, Simon, do you want to kick us off on the keynote?
Sure, I'd be very happy to. So, in fact, just before the keynote, we did a bit of a getting to know you in the form of conference top trumps, which I thought was very jolly.
Oh, that was grand, wasn't it?
Yeah, we enjoyed that very much. Essentially, each of the groups on the tables wrote down a number according to certain categories. So it's number of cups of coffees, yeah.
Hours travelled.
Yeah, playful learning conferences you've attended so far. And then played a delegate from each table, stood up and had to give their best category, as in top trumps. And that was very good. Although pipped right at the very end by somebody who travelled all the way from America and had spent 20
hours. That bizarre table. Oh, it's 14 hours travel, but plenty, I think, plenty.
Tisk, tisk. There we are. But immediately after that, we had the keynote, which was delivered by Emma Behrman, and it was fascinating. Essentially, she has collaborated and continues to collaborate with a contemporary artist, Pippa Hale. And they received, they bid for and received some funding in order to create some sort of a play space in Cambridge, near to the station. But there were a lot of, they were clearly looking for something a bit more than just a playground, because there was a list of sort of 12 criteria that they wanted for this play space. They went in there and they, essentially how it ended up was a fleet of Playbox shipping containers, I quote, which invite people from the community and from the neighborhood where these shipping containers are being delivered to come and play in a very unstructured manner. And that is really lovely. But what I really got from it, and what I thought was fascinating, was this subtext of hostile architecture. So parts of the city and the furniture, if you will, of the city, the benches and other things that are designed to stop people from using those spaces. Little nodules on edges or benches or things to stop skateboarders from grinding along them.
Oh, Simon, I didn't know you were up with the whole modern youth movement.
Oh, I'm so happy this is an audio podcast. Simon's expression when he said grinding was quite
it's special. Like smug. It's like, I know, I'm down with the kids.
I know, I got something altogether more seedy from grinding.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's Michael.
I see. Well, no, I intended
to. I do apologise.
I thought I wasn't being quite smutty enough, so...
If there is a benchmark, it is low.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, speaking of benchmarks,
Mark's sitting at a bench right now.
He is. so there's this subtext of not wanting people to use the spaces, and it's subtextual because it's not always overtly said. It's not always said that you really shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. Perhaps it's security guards coming along and telling you that you need to move on. It's, you know, police being called if there are teenagers hanging around and so on and so forth. But of course, where are these people supposed to go? And it ended up with, at the moment, an idea of taking the concept of the bylaw, whether it's a bylaw for a certain little park or an area of a city, and changing it into play laws. And for me, as coming from a primary teaching background, that was really lovely, because that is the difference between telling a child, don't fiddle around with this, which is very negative and it doesn't really tell them what they can do, and instead saying, if you've got a bit too much energy, why don't you try this? Mm. And that is such a lovely change. And so... What I took from that was this lovely idea of there may well be this subtext of what you're not allowed to do, the hostile architecture and the bylaws and everything and the expectations that we have of public spaces. But we can flip that on its head and we can allow people to be playful and to explore and to do the things that they're most interested in. And that was really, really lovely. And in fact, we took the opportunity, Mike and I, to interview Emma, and we should be able to listen to that very soon on this very podcast.
We would be able to listen to it now,
but it's been studio has been locked away from us.
It has. We've had to set up an emergency studio in a kitchen.
I've just realised my Scooby-Doo Converse are in there.
Oh no!
Oh no! Anyway, I can wear them tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll wear a fun T-shirt tomorrow. We'll be characters.
Yeah.
We'll be those guys.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, shall I go on?
Yeah, so session one, we did podcasting.
And then, so session two, Mark and I went to Once Upon a Time, Creating Connections and Building Engagement with a Storytelling Mindset.
Oh, with the Adobe...
With Adobe Express, which was... Becky Hartnup, who you heard earlier, and Karina Buckley. And it was a really, really good session. Mm. It was a really neat session. I like any session where I'm introduced to a tool I've not used before, for starters. Yeah. And I like any session which talks about narrative story structures. And this was a nice, really lightweight intro. And I think, you know, just a side note, Becky did a great job in kind of on the fly amending the session to cope with some of the tech woes. I was just, there was a nice introduction to you, some of the basics of story structure and how to create them kind of out of nothing in a group scenario. It was very light. It was very fun. And I just, yeah, opportunity to muck around on Adobe Express was very much appreciated. It's a kind of like, if anybody's used Canva, the video editing feature on Canva before, it's a really similar to that, like ridiculously similar. Like somebody needs to probably contact the lawyers because some of the buttons are...
No, they're all, because Camtasia's such a similar thing.
Is it?
Windows Movie Maker, they all work on that timeline type thing.
No, but like literally like the background remove buttons and everything look identical. And you're like, oh, spicy.
They had to hear first. So what are you getting out at the end of that? Is it, are you producing video or?
Yeah, a little video. We did one about an umbrella that's sad because it's in the rain. No, and a beach ball that's sad. And so you search for images of beach ball, and there's an AI generating tool so you can create an image of a beach, sad looking beach ball. And then you've got little animations like rain so you can superimpose the two. So you make a little sort of 2-minute video. And then the concept behind the story was that there's got to be an incident that happens. I can't remember what the particular phrase is. And then you tell a little story about what happens next. So it's really basic 3-act structure. But yeah,
I think that's what you come away with, is kind of it's a real taster of those structures. And okay, here's the structures, here's how to use them really quick. It's not a, you know, this is, you're gonna come out of this having written The Hobbit Part Two. But it's a, you know, here's these structures, here's how you can start. It's a starting point with knowingly using story structures, which felt really good. But anyway, I'm conscious that I was then unable to attend the next one because I was having a faff with the gear. But Mark was able to attend session 3 of the day.
So I went to the role-playing to imagine futures thing. It wasn't, because I'm doing stuff on futures, but it wasn't really about futures. It was more taking a future scenario. It's your basic premise of science fiction, which is let's look at stuff that's going on today, ethical dilemmas today, like gene therapy or right to end life and those sorts of things, but set in 2070 in a city called New Canterbury. So if you want to search for this work online, just do a search on New Canterbury, because that's what the project's called. And what they've done is create the idea of Canterbury, I guess, is flooded, and it's now moved to Scotland. So there's a floating city, and they communicate with the trees, and so you've got people whose job is to translate for the trees and all that sort of stuff. So you're each given a role, and then you are then given a scenario. So I sat on the gene therapy table, and so Elliot was there, and Roger was he on our table? I think he was, yes. Yeah. So, and what we did was all adopt a role, and then we had to then do a sort of general assembly where one of the people who are leading it then took over the role of, I'm the convener of this particular debate, and then we each had to debate from the position of our particular role about our feelings about this particular thing, and it was great. I was Morvin, and I had Pompe's disease, and therefore I needed gene therapy, but somebody else also had it. So the intention was, I assume that between us we had to argue who deserved the gene therapy, because there's only enough money for one bit of therapy. But it was, what we could do was create our own motivations and our own agendas, all from the point of view of that particular person. So I was saying, well, I don't need it. Varna needs it. And Varna was saying, well, I don't need it. I don't want it. Morvin can have it. So it can go in any direction, which it was similar to, remember Rebecca's thing from last year?
Yeah,
which was, there's a church and it's about to be blown up, and should we save the icons or the people? And people commented afterwards that I really got into the role. And I think partly it was because it was a science fiction scenario, so it's easier because you can make it up. And also I'm more familiar with the 2070s than I am with the 1870s, really.
The 2020s.
Or the 2020s, good point. So that was great. You could imagine your own thing because it's the future. But also, I think because that with that scenario, although it was interesting, you were given very specific motivations and very specific things that you had to achieve on your role play card, whereas this was a lot more open, so it gave you a lot more flexibility to inhabit the role and then create an ethical argument about what should happen. So it was a it was kind of flaky. I fed back to them about the flakiness of the way it was set up. We weren't really given, we should have had individual cards that showed us what we needed and all of the key information, and instead they gave us one printed sheet per table with everything on there, which was a lot of slow to get started. But once we were in it, I think it was a lot of fun, and also just the whole debate and things. You could imagine generating an entire role-play environment by using this scenario. Not sure how much we learned, but but it was the first time I've ever done anything improv role-play thing where I really felt I was connecting with the test.
It sounds like just having a decontextualized way to have an ethical debate is in and of itself a valuable thing. I think the issue with having ethical debates is that ethics is usually involved, and like it's really hard to disconnect them from things that happen.
That's
now,
the intention.
Whereas by taking it forwards, you're able to kind of add enough separation for people to actually engage a little bit less emotively, maybe.
Yeah, I think right of to end of life, but I suppose part of the issue is that gene therapy, in the way it was being discussed, it's like, well, maybe I don't need gene therapy. Maybe I could just upload my consciousness to the cloud. You know, the options are not real options, so the details probably don't translate, but just the general process of having an ethical debate, your basic tools of how do you debate things ethically, that really conveyed. So and just to learn that I can do improv if it's set up in a way that works with me, it's just a cool thing to walk away with as well.
I discovered that my back pocket is coming off and has left a hole through which you can possibly see my underwear, so I think that I really need some genes therapy.
I was going to say how long you've been sitting on that, but...
Oh, God.
Absolutely belting.
All day.
That seems like a good time to tail us off. So that has been the day one coverage from Pedagodzilla. I would say, what have we got on the program for day two? But if you're anything like me, you've forgotten what you've signed up to for day two. So you're going
I have no idea whatsoever. I'm just looking forward to the fish and chips and fending off the seagulls.
Yeah, I am ravenous. I don't know about you guys. So let's get down. Thank you very much for listening. We will catch you next time, tomorrow, ideally, on Pedagodzilla. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
See you then.